Good afternoon, sir. Before we get started, what is your name?
Robert Haynes.
Okay, we'll just hold on for one moment. Mr. Neal, going to conduct your hearing at this time, so just hang on to the phone, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Can you hear me okay?
I believe so, yes.
You appeared for the Arizona Board of Executive Commission this afternoon in reference to a parole hearing. Could you state your full name and agency number for the record, please?
Yes, Robert James, 082914.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to introduce the board members that have conducted the hearing at this time. On the screen to your left, your very far left, the Honorable Michael Johnson, then the Honorable Gail Rittenhouse, then the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman, and the far right is the Honorable Richard Onis. My name is David Neal, and I'll be hearing you today. So we're going to have some information with you, sir, about your sentence, and we're going over the offense that got you here in the first place. And we'll discuss some of the things about you that may have changed to make you a good candidate for return to the community. So as I go through this, if you hear anything that you think is incorrect, please let me know. Can you talk about it?
Okay.
If you can't hear it at any time, let us know so we can make sure that you understand what's going on. Okay?
All right,
so you're currently 75 years old, sir?
Yes.
Okay. And Mr. Gaines is serving a life sentence for first-degree murder, which began January 4th, 1990. Mr. Gaines became parole eligible on January 4th, 2015, and he was certified for this hearing to waive the parole home grant absolute discharge on February 27th, 2019. He's been before the board four times previously and has been denied each time. Mr. Gaines was found guilty by a jury and sentenced on September 21st, 1990. Originally, the state asked for the death penalty in the case, but was moved that request at sentencing. So, I'm going to give a brief summary of the case. So, it seems that on November 16th of 1989, that you murdered your wife and time sharing James with the assistance of Stephen Simpson. Seems that the victim had confronted you approximately 3 that morning in the kitchen of the home. You hit her in the head with a pool cue. She collapsed the floor but did not lose consciousness. You proceeded to hit her multiple times while she was laying on the floor. Stephen Simpson was living with you at the time, and you said to him, "Help me, she won't die." Mr. Simpson responded by going to the bedroom and returning with a curling iron. You wrapped the cord around the victim's neck and strangled her. Her final words to you were, "I love you, Bob." You and Mr. Simpson and concealed the body in plastic, placed in the back of her truck, drove to the Vulture Mines located 10 miles south of Wittenberg and dumped her body in a vertical air shaft. You then have one of your employees drive the victim's truck to Las Vegas and abandoned it there. You sold victim jewelry in Palm Springs. You complained that a divorce would have cost you $300,000. You also mentioned that you had previously purchased life insurance on your life. And you and Mr. Simpson burned the initial evidence of the crime at the family cabin in Indian Creek, Arizona. The body was located in early January 1990 with the cord of the curling iron still wrapped around the neck. Autopsy revealed multiple lacerations and bruises consistent with physical beating, and the cause of death was determined to be premature strangulation. You were later questioned by police Copeland. Eventually, you were arrested and charged, convicted by a jury of first-degree murder. Finally, Mr. Simpson admitted his role in the and agreed to a cooperation plea for which he served approximately 8 years in prison. And as a condition of his plea, he testified against you at trial. So, at this point, does that sound fairly correct, sir?
Well, there's quite a bit there that's not really that accurate. He didn't live with me. He came over to borrow money. And that's when she came running out of the back of the house and started screaming and hollering, what was he doing there? And she went out to the garage and picked up the sawed-off pool cue and came in and started hitting me with it. And he pulled her off of me and wrapped the cord around her neck and strangled her. And when he left with her body in her truck, he went by himself. I was not with him. And he did not testify at my trial. Everything else, I guess, was pretty accurate.
Okay.
But I only hit her one time with the pool cue when I got it away from her, and it was a backhanded blow, so it wasn't very severe. I was trying to protect myself.
But once you got the pool cue from her and hit her and knocked her down, you had to strangle her to keep protecting yourself?
Yeah, what?
You had to strangle her and kill her to keep protecting yourself?
I didn't strangle her. Steve Simpson wrapped that cord around. He came up behind her, threw that cord around her neck, and tightened it.
Okay. Well,
I was half dazed because he hit me in the back. She hit me in the back of the head with that pool cue.
Okay, but it went way beyond self-defense. So I want to explain a couple of things to you too while we're going through this. You were in jail for a particular sentence for a particular crime, but the parole board has we have a responsibility to the citizens aware of one of them, kind of twofold. One is in the best interest of justice, and the other is what is in the best interest for the safety of the community. So in that, we consider things that have happened since you've been incarcerated, like what you've done for programming and how you've changed and everything else, but also consider things that happened along with or before the crime involved, which gives us a better idea for your overall, view overall rather than just that one instance. Okay, you understand that?
Yes, I understand that, yeah.
Okay. So, that being said, the argument, fight, she was killed by strangulation, and the body was disposed of behind in a mine, and her truck was driven and left in Las Vegas. So it was some, even though the offense of killing her may have been a spur of the moment thing with no planning, after the fact, there was a lot of thought and things put into the cover-up aspect of it, which...
I would say that I panicked. I panicked pretty bad, and I didn't know what to do because we had a lot of problems with domestic violence and the police coming out to the house, and I knew I was in trouble. I just figured that they were going to come right at me, which they did. And so I panicked, and I wasn't making very good decisions, and I understand that now.
Okay. All right, so as we go on with this, one of the things, like I said, is the past and present history. In the packet that I've got letters from a couple of different people, and they outlined a few allegations and other information that wasn't involved in the trial and everything. And what it deals with is there's some very serious allegations by another one of your children and other parents that knew of you and what was going on, to the effect that there were a lot of victims came forward, young children, so that you abused them over the years, and including your own children. And according to one source for the county attorney, had like 120 or so molestation charges, and there were 20 or so victims. But the family had been told they weren't going to deal with those because you were already being tried for murder and would be in prison for a very, very long time. But those kind of allegations, that kind of indication of actions, brings up a whole other set of issues about the safety of the community. And so what I would like is for you to tell me what is going on.
Well, most of what it was in those reports was not true. And I really don't know. I just wasn't making very good decisions. I was under so much stress that I just don't know. I'm not like that now. My whole life has changed. I've realized the mistakes of my past and my bad choices. And I would very much like a second chance to prove to the community, as you call it out there, that I can be a law-abiding citizen and a productive member of society.
Okay.
And my heart's right, I got myself right with God, and my heart's in the right place, and I don't know what else to do. I took all the programs they had two or three times, and I haven't had any disciplinary action since I've been in here. Over 10,000 days, as you see in that report.
Okay, well, let's go back to that. You said that most of the stuff in the report is not true, and you're just making bad choices. That, in my opinion, that is an awfully simplistic way to explain the behavior you were accused of. I mean, I can understand that, a six-year-old child might not remember exactly the time they were molested by somebody. And so the prosecutor may end up with three molest counts, and there was really only two. Or he might end up with three, and it was really 27. So I can understand those kind of discrepancies, but there's enough information in there and people, victims, stating this to make sure. I believe that you were doing something in regard to molesting children, and if none others, at least your own children, and from two different marriages. And, we've got your own children making those statements. So, are they lying about this?
Most of it. Right now, their motive is because they're afraid to see me go out there. Because when I got arrested, they stole everything I had. All my real estate, my property, my vehicles, my tools, my clothes. They took everything. Just my son and my daughter and their mother. And they're afraid of what I might do, but I don't care about all that.
What about the other children? There's five children involved and have been accusations involving five children, two different marriages. So did all five children steal all your stuff? Or you just said your son and daughter, which to me indicates it was probably your from the last marriage.
Well, so the first parents, the kids that took everything.
Okay, but it doesn't make sense. If there's five kids from two different marriages, and the kids from one marriage took all your stuff, and that's their motive for saying those things about you, what's the motive of the other kid? And it isn't all sexual assault. It's severe beatings, those for no reason, and more than just punishment, more like abuse, and instead of spanking or beatings. Well, but what I'm asking is, sir, are you saying that all these other people are making up these stories, and you're the only one here that's telling the truth?
No, I'm not saying that at all, but what I'm saying is that when I come home from work and everybody says, you got to beat those kids, and I didn't do it. I did not do it. I spanked two of them one time, and then from then on, I wouldn't spank them.
Well, why would your son talk about constant beatings and severe treatment like that? Not that, I mean, you know, this is just a punishment type stuff. We're not talking about sexually molesting.
Yeah, I know, and I don't understand why he's saying that.
Well, I would either, other than the fact that it probably is true, but, you know, and if it was just one of your children and the other four said, I don't really know anything, it would be kind of a, you know, perplexing situation. But with five children, and there was a person that knew you that says there was at least 20 victims total of different children that you molested over the years. And it's not one of your children that said that the county attorney had 120 molest charges that they weren't going to do anything with. So I'm perplexed by all these allegations, and you're simply saying you made bad choices.
I'm simply saying what?
That you made bad choices. You're not even old enough to, you know, you're minimizing everything. And it happens, you know, I mean, all of it, the murder and everything else in these allegations, even though you weren't prosecuted for it. Like, we look at criminal history when we're figuring or deciding on these paroles, we look at criminal history, and it's not necessarily whether you were convicted, but, you know, you were arrested 27 times for the same thing, they all dismiss it. Well, that indicates that there's some problems, some bad behavior that needs to be addressed. And it's the same thing with this. Nobody prosecuted them, but the allegations were brought forward. And according to the information we have, there was at least 20 victims, and that's a lot more. Well, I guess more children than the reports say are yours. So, were you not ever molesting any of these victims?
No, I wasn't.
What was your contact with them?
Well, I don't know who they're talking about, but I guess the five of them were my children. You know, they lived in the same house I did.
Yeah, well, let's just restrict it to those five. So they're all fabricating these stories, and you're telling the truth about it. You never molested even one of your daughters?
No.
Okay. Another thing that comes with child molesters too is that they don't look at those crimes the same way as the normal citizen that doesn't have a propensity for children. In their minds, it's okay. And so they minimize it. And everybody else, people that don't have these tendencies to molest children, look at it as a very, very, very serious and deviant offense, but the perpetrators of good people over the time minimize it when it's not that big of a deal. Yeah, maybe you get involved, but it's not that big of a deal. And that's the feeling I get from you. But that's the feeling I get from you.
you know, if it were true, I would feel it was a big deal. Because I don't think that that's right. That's definitely not acceptable.
Okay, but you know, like I say, I just get the feeling they're minimizing all this stuff. It's, there's all these allegations where they're just, most of them are true. Okay, but when I ask you why you think that, then you know, talk about they don't want you out because they stole all of your stuff and everything. And it's, you're moving away from, you know, from responsibility on this stuff. But even the even the murder of your wife is, when you tell the story, you kind of minimize it. And we sit in this board, and we have a lot of people come before us, and a lot of people tell us their story about some very heinous crimes. And it's actually pretty easy to tell when somebody's really taking full responsibility. It's full of regrets for what they do, but you know, it's I make bad choices. Well, we all make bad choices, but most people don't make bad choices. They end up with somebody in the grave, or bad choices to molest some child, or bad choices to severely beat some child for discipline. There's more to it than just making bad choices.
I never beat anybody like that. And I do feel responsible for her death. I didn't actually kill her, but I feel responsible. The first thing I should have done was let that drug addict hang around. Because I found out later he was selling her drugs. And everybody's hanging together because of the drug situation. I don't do drugs and never did.
Okay. I'm going to see if my fellow members have any questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Gaines, when we started this hearing and you corrected a few things about Mr. Neal's accounting of the crime, you said, I think this is right, but that your wife had hit you with the pool cue and you got it away from her. And maybe fell backwards, or maybe managed to. I think you said you did a backhand hit, so it wasn't very hard of a hit.
Right.
But then that Mr. Simpson came up behind her and strangled her. So I'm just curious, what motive would Mr. Simpson have had to do that?
The only thing I can figure is it was because he was selling her drugs and he wanted to quiet her. But they didn't get along. They fought all the time. That's why I said I shouldn't have even had him around.
So you think he strangled her to keep her quiet?
I don't know. It's possible.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Any other questions?
I don't have any.
Okay. So we have... We don't have any more questions. We don't have any supporters here for you. So there are some victims' representatives here, so they're going to have the opportunity to speak now, and then I'll be back with you. So.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the board. My name is Jessie Wade. I work for the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. I'm here to speak on behalf of the victim, Carrie Gaines. Ms. Gaines was 28 years old at the time of her murder. She had two children. She had a two-year-old son and a nine-year-old daughter. You spoke previously about the facts of this case. I'd like to point out this was not a quick murder. Ms. Gaines suffered. She suffered by first being beaten by a pool stick, and then she suffered later while she was strangled. This is not something where she would immediately lose consciousness or would go quickly. She suffered, she knew that her death was impending, and even with that, her final words were still, "I love you, Bob." She was 28 years old. This defendant has repeatedly and consistently refused to accept responsibility, and he still, to this day, tries to push it off on somebody else. somebody else who did not have a financial motive to end this marriage to Ms. Gaines, who did not have the relationship that he had with Ms. Gaines. If you look at everything this defendant did in order to try to evade responsibility, it is clear, even now, he continues to try to escape it. You look at everything he did, from dumping her body to where she could not be found, to having a friend take her vehicle, to selling her jewelry, to concocting the story that he even told her children that she had run off with another man. He still refuses to take responsibility. He shows an immense lack of remorse for the harm that he caused Ms. Gaines and her family. So we are asking you to deny this defendant parole or release. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Alejandro Palacios. I'm a victim advocate with the Arizona Department of Corrections, Office of Victim Services. I'm going to read a statement that was provided to me by one of the victims in this case. Dear Chairman, I'm going to be reading verbatim, okay? These are the letters written. Dear Chairman, please read the following letter. I did not know how to write this, so I just wrote from my heart. I have addressed Robert Gaines in this letter with a lot of emotion and have added my request of you. Please, we all know that this letter comes with a lot of emotion and heartache. It is not well written, but these are my thoughts swimming through my head at the moment. Sincerely, Jennifer, to Robert Gaines, murderer and molester. Yes, you are both. You were convicted of murder, but somehow you got away with not being given the title of a child rapist. In my mind, you are both. You convicted yourself of that years ago when you chose to take my innocence away from me. I was a young girl who had just lost her father, and you were an adult man that knew better. You preyed on my innocence and fear, and you used me for your sick pleasure. Don't worry, I kept your secret hidden from hiding for a very long time. I did what I had to protect me, and that was to forget about you. But then you had to go and kill your wife, and in doing that, once again crept back into my mind. This time, however, I did not cower in silence. I didn't hide behind my shame and hurt. And I found the courage to not keep your secret any longer. No, Bob. I told of you molesting me because you were behind bars and I never wanted you to get out. I told because I felt safe to finally speak of the horrible crime you committed against me. Now, here we are, almost 40 years after you raped me, and what, 30 years after you murdered your wife again. Here you are creeping back into my life. How dare you, Bob? I have spent my life fighting damage that you created, but I have been able to realize that it was not me that did anything wrong. It was you. It was you that chose to take away my innocence and did nothing to deserve the life sentence that you gave to me for your twisted and sick pleasure. I was a child, Bob, a little girl. I believed in the happy ever after. I believed in fairy tales. I believed that one day my prince would come. I believed that I was a little princess. You told me I was, and that you were the knight in shining armor that was going to rescue me. You would rescue me from anyone that would do me harm. You would give me anything I wanted, and you did. Do you remember what you gave me, Bob? Besides the nightmares, scars, anger, hatred, shame, pain, fear, bulimia, anorexia, addictions, unhealthy relationships, bitterness, unhappiness, and hatred? Yes, you gave me all of those things from your selfish act, but you gave me something else that day. Do you remember, Bob? From what I heard, you claim that you don't remember me. You don't remember me and what you did to me, and that makes me so angry. It must be nice to conveniently forget. Who am I to pretend you don't know me? It must be nice to forget the things you did and pretend that you are a victim rather than the sick and twisted individual that you are and have always been and will always be. You claim that I am just some crazy person that has nothing better to do with my life. So I am sitting here wasting my time trying to get some man that I don't know to get in prison. Seriously? I am not crazy. And I have, unfortunately, have never forgotten what you did to me all those years ago. No, Bob, I have not forgotten what you did to me as a child, just as you have sat in that prison for the crime you committed. I, too, have sat in my own prison, but not for a crime I committed, but for the crime you committed against me. It must be nice to conveniently forget, but I have not forgotten. So let me remind you and tell everyone else what it was that you gave me all those years ago, Bob. You who pretended to be my knight in shining armor, my protector high up in the castle, pulled me under your lap and raped me. You raped me and took my innocence, my virginity, and my childhood. You took that and so much more. I trusted you and I believed you when you said you would protect me, and then you didn't. You did not protect me, but rather you hurt me. And in return for what you did, you gave me something. You gave me a kitten. Do you remember? As you finished with me, you gave me a kitten and said that if I didn't tell, I could have the kitten. You also told me that if I did tell, that you will kill anything or anyone that I love as you begin to squeeze the life out of that kitten right before my eyes. I promise you that I will never say anything and beg you to stop. You threw her down and told me to stop crying or you would finish her off. I was 6 years old, you monster. I wiped the tears away and I took my kitten home and I learned that day to cry in silence and behind closed doors. I also learned to lie and I kept your dirty little secret and I learned to hate you. You were the first person I ever hated and I still hate you for what you did. Out of that thought, I got deja vu, my kid. I learned how to love and to nurture and care for something. I loved her and I hated her, but I swore that I will never tell a soul. I will protect her. Then one day, a few weeks after you raped me, I came home and found deja vu dead on the ground. And it devastated me because the day before, I had almost told my sister what you had done. And then I came home, and she was dead, and I blamed myself for her dying. To this day, I don't know if you had anything to do with her dying, but I never spoke of what you did out of fear that you will continue to kill all that I love. So I lived in silence. I kept your secret. I am no longer the little girl that cries until she vomits, or the young lady that cries and then forces herself to vomit to get rid of the ugly monster inside. I am now a real woman that has found strength and courage to survive your abuse. I found the good in me, and I'm proud of the woman I have become. You did not break me. Knowing that you have been in prison for all these years has made me feel somewhat safe. But now knowing that you have a chance to be a free man sickens me. I have for the last 20 years made it my job to protect and nurture children. If you get out of prison, I believe you will once again prey on the young and innocent. If you get out, I will not feel safe. Society will not be safe. You may have asked God for forgiveness, and I'm sure that He has forgiven you. This is what He does, forgives. I, however, have not, and I'm not sure that I can. I suffered terribly at your hands, and I am not ready to forgive you. I also feel that in your request to be free, you have once again victimized me. I am reliving the nightmare all over again, and it hurts. But you need to know that while you sit in prison, I am out living my life, and as I stroll through the streets in Italy with a man that truly deserves the title of my Prince Charming, I will think of you for the last time and smile because you will never know what it feels like to be free. But of that moment, I will be free because I will no longer give you another chance to hurt me. I am freeing myself of all the hurt, and I'm going to let myself have a happy ever after. I have nothing more to say to you. You have consumed more of my time than you deserve. My final words are this. To those that will decide if Robert Gates goes free, I beg you to think of the crimes that this man has committed. Think of me at the young age of 6 being raped by this man. Think of a young boy who lost his mother, a family that lost their child, sister. Think of the crime that he committed and the lack of respect that he had then. He threw my innocence away and threw his wife away. This man has no respect and no remorse for the things he did. I am asking that you not let him free. I am asking that you help me to protect the children that he could harm again. I am asking that he not be allowed to continue to hurt me with this request. He does not deserve to be free. I am not and will be free of what he did. But I will no longer be a prisoner because of what he did. Thank you for your time, Jennifer.
I was given a letter.
Will you state your name?
Yes, sir. My name is Linda Gaines. I'm Bob Gaines' daughter from his first marriage. I'm a little floored by what he said today. Give me just a moment. Now I would like to read that letter to you, but first I would like to just make my own statement. Mr. Gaines just told you he never beat his children, and obviously you guys have read the letters because I could hear you referring to them, and several of you I recognize from years before. He didn't beat his children, he beat his children severely. It was ritualistic beatings. Mom did sometimes yell, beat those kids when he came in the door, but that's because that's how they handled us. He would send us to our room. We all had different rooms, there were three of us. And we would go back there and we'd wait for him to come in. He would visit us one at a time. He'd usually go to my brother Rick first. That was his favorite kid. He likes Rick a lot. And he would tell us to bend over on our bed. Put our hands on our side, and he tells how many hits we were getting, and he pulled his big black leather belt off his waist and said, "You're getting five." You bent over, he'd start hitting you. If you couldn't take all five consecutively, if you moved, or if you put your hand back there to protect yourself, he'd start over. And I put that in one of my letters, very detailed, so I don't think we need to go into it again, but I just want him to know that nobody believes he didn't beat his children. Nobody believes he didn't molest his children. I'm here in front of you to tell you that that man snuck into my room almost every night when I was 8 and 9 years old. They think that he started when I was an infant because I had a very swollen red vagina when I was a baby. That my mom thought that's just how little girls looked until she had another baby with another man, realized that there was something terribly wrong. I was constantly at the doctor with kidney infections. I explained, why is this girl wetting the bed? Why was I wetting the bed at 10 years old? He was sneaking into my room. My mother took tranquilizers and Xanax and Valium and whatever she had to take to endure. He has told me in a letter recently that he was abused by my mother and that he suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder from the abuse he took from my mother. My mother's a small woman like me. He's a very large man. He doesn't look large now. He looks very small. But he was 240, 250 pounds, 6'3", a very large man. He beat her. He beat us. He beat everybody. She would take her medication at night to go to sleep. I believe he paid the doctor, but we had this doctor that would give her everything to keep her knocked out. So he would come into my room and molest me. I never told anybody until I was about 16, it came out. And that's the last time we had a relationship with him. I asked him when he did it, he said, I was crazy, and I told him, I don't want to be your daughter anymore. Don't call me. Don't talk to me. I never heard from him again until he was in prison. And he wrote me a letter, and he told me he wanted to be my daddy again. Being Bob's daughter was not a privilege. It came at a very high price. I just wanted to address the things that he had said to you. And I just want to read this short little letter. from me. We're all here today because my father killed his beautiful wife, Karen Gaines. She was only 3 years older than me. She was actually my brother's girlfriend first. My brother was sleeping with her, and she would go to leave at night, and she'd sneak around the house and sneak into his bedroom. And then it broke my brother's heart, but eventually Dad ended up marrying his girlfriend. That's how Karen came in our life. My father had a very tortured childhood himself. In no way does that excuse what he did, but it helps to understand who he is. He was the second son of four children. His father was a mean, sadistic alcoholic. He was raised in a Swanson, Florida, in a very poor family. They did not have toys or Christmas presents or birthday presents. They often didn't even have shoes or proper clothes. It was a very violent and hard place for four kids to be raised with the amount of unthinkable abuse that went on in his home. I want you to know that my father is not a man without family. You look at his file, and you see that nobody is speaking up for him. Bob does have family. Yes, he does. They're all very much around. There are three sons, Robbie, Ricky, and Bobby, who was Carrie's youngest boy. Then there was one daughter, which was me, and then you had a stepdaughter, which was Carrie's daughter. He had two stepsons, Brandon and Christian. Those seven kids gave him eight grandchildren, with one on the way. And those eight grandchildren gave him 11 grandchildren. So this man is not standing here alone because all these people decided to make up lies about him. There are 38 family members, immediate family members out there that want him to stay where he is for fear of what he will do. I know he never showed, I'm not saying him as being for mercy for him, because I know he never showed any mercy for his victims. You have letters from some of the ex-wives and some of the children. Over the last 5 years, the folder has been filled with many letters from mothers and wives and concerned people describing what they endured at my father's hands. I am here to remind you of who he really is. In the early 90s, when Carrie was brutally murdered, the women and children started speaking out and telling what they had been through. The DA was overwhelmed with over 120 accusations of abuse, mostly sexual abuse, on very young children. He didn't care for boys or girls. He didn't care. He would take either one. They decided not to prosecute him for these crimes to spare the children and focus on putting him away for good, for the brutal, unconscionable, violent murder and disposal of one Carrie Gaines. And here we are now, 21 years later, and we all have to remain this nightmare over and over as we can contemplate the thought and fear of him being released without proper treatment for what is really his issues. I am still in contact with many of the women he abused, myself being one of them. Last night was a hard night for all of us. We didn't talk. We all lived in different homes and in different places. But we all know what this day is about today. There were many tears and lots of fears. Many people come to speak against him out of fear. The letters are very quite great because we have to go to such a dark place to remember him. Even every one of those letters you have in front of you, I would like you to imagine a young woman at home in her kitchen table, her children in bed asleep as she tries to muster up the courage to put down on paper with terrible secrets she's hidden from her loved ones that tortures her soul. As the words start to fly out on the paper, the tears start to stream down their faces, almost blinding them. You cannot think about it, you just write. They may sound troubled or confused, but the women have to take themselves there quickly and try not to linger in that nightmare. Most of them do not do any editing or changes. Once the words are down, they send it out for you to read. every name of the road, even reading of the road is too painful to relive. Every one of those letters were written by a young woman alone. She had to make herself sit down and face this monster again. I say monster because he has never shown any remorse or even any type of admission of what he did. He will tell you it's all lies. And remember, I wrote this last night, and he stood right there and he told you these are all lies. And that we all got together and just made this stuff up. It's true, this is not true. This is not the case. But they all sound so familiar to each other. And that is because it's all true. He has a pattern in time. Every one of his wives hid after they left him. They left him. They feared for their safety and the safety of their children. Most of us try to never think about him. He rarely comes up in conversation. It's just best to not talk about him. The first few years he was in prison, he was lots of therapy sessions for all of us. Not together, we all individually had to take care of our own mental issues. As well as trying to make our lives for ourselves after the abuse was finally over and he was locked up. It was good for about 15 years after that, and then these hearings came up. And the rehabilitating man can be released. But I do not feel my father has done the work to be considered to be released back into the real world as a free man or even a monitoring man. He told me he's taking classes on parenting and anger and social skills. And that does not address, nor does it fix the fact that he is a very damaged man and left a virtual wave of abuse in his mouth and the many women and children that he abused. He needs to atone for what he did and at the very least admit it and say he is sorry. I do not hate my father. I forgave him a long time ago. He writes to me that I need to forgive and let go, but according to him, there's nothing to forgive. He will tell you I'm crazy. I have no reason as a 55-year-old woman to make this stuff up. I came forward several years before he killed Carrie. Recently, he's invited me to watch church with him. I am not the world, and I believe the Lord is not either. When I was little, he was very active in our church. He was the head deacon for our church for many years. He was in church on Sunday and molesting his daughter on Sunday night. He crept into my room when my mother would go to bed and molest me. I asked him one day, I was about 9 years old, why he was having sexual relationships with me. I had asked somebody at the church, what is adultery? They honestly told me what it was. I went to him confused with this new information. I asked him, Daddy, doesn't the Bible say thou shalt not commit adultery? He told me, very calmly, that my mother didn't give him enough love, so we needed to love him. That was how daddies loved their daughters. It was sickening. So if my daddy is truly sorry and wants to be a free man, he needs to say he is sorry to all the women. Stop saying everyone is crazy and making up lies about him. He needs some serious counseling and help to understand the massive amount of pain he inflicted. The lives have changed forever. He needs to understand he made the choices to do what he did. Now that he has been exposed to, it's time to let us all heal and say he's sorry and own up to his actions and the damage he caused to all of us. He may very well die in this prison. That is because of the choices he has made and still is making. I lost my daughter a long time ago. I don't want another single human to go through what he has put us all through. I do not feel like he's okay. I handed you guys a letter, and this one was written by the mother of the little girl Jennifer, who you just read her the story about. Jennifer ended up becoming part of our family because my brother married her aunt, so we all did finally get to be friends and family, and that was long after that. So this comes from Jennifer's mother. And Jim has written to you in the past also, but she had a little more she wanted to say. Okay. To the members of the board of the parole board, I'm looking back across the last 4 years. There have been a few days that Robert Gaines hasn't entered my thoughts. It's been that many years since his daughter Linda came to me and told me that her father had been molesting her since she was one girl. I can still sort of hear her when I put her up on the corner of my living room. So that.
I'll read this verbatim. I can still so clearly see Linda curled up in the corner of my living room sofa, soft crying as she detailed the torment she and her mother and siblings had suffered at the hands of her father. Little did I know at the time that my own daughter had also been victimized by that man. It wasn't until she was 17 years old that she too would come to me and divulge that she had also been abused by Robert Gaines. I was able to pinpoint the approximate age she was molested by Mr. Gaines only because of the clothing she recalled wearing that day, a pair of little denim shorts with a smiley face patch on the back pocket. I remember the tiny Siamese kitten he gave her, never knowing for many years that gift was meant to keep her from exposing what he had done to her. He had threatened that if she told what he had done, not only would he kill her kitten, but her mommy as well. That tiny kitten that my daughter named Deja Vu did not live more than a month. We came home one day to find Deja Vu with her neck broken in the middle of our living room floor. There was absolutely no explanation for the condition we found that kitten in. It remained an odd mystery to all of us until many years later. When I consider the enormous burden my little girl carried on her small shoulders, believing that her silence was the only way to protect her mommy from the same fate as her kitten, I am just heartsick. What makes the act Bob committed against my daughter so much more heinous is that my daughter's daddy had died not long prior. She so desperately missed her father, and Bob used that to his advantage. As a result of Linda coming to me with the horrific stories of her father's abuse, I became very close friends with her mother and the rest of the Gaines family. In fact, my younger sister married one of Bob's sons. Through the years, I have watched the serious ongoing impact the abuse Bob visited on his first three children and his first wife throughout their lives. I knew Bob's wife only socially during her marriage to Mr. Gaines, but after she went underground for a number of years, fearing for the safety of herself and her son, I later quite ironically encountered her again. When her daughter made the high school team I was coaching, I recognized Bob Gaines' third wife immediately. I remained in touch with her since. Her son was also victimized by Robert Gaines. This was verified through medical professionals. I could list one individual after another whose lives were forever changed by Mr. Gaines' abuse of them. I have remained in touch with many of them through the years. Their lives have been filled with mental health issues, medical problems, drug and alcohol addiction, relationship difficulties, and in some cases, repeated suicide attempts, along with weeks or months in the mental health institutions. The common denominator is Robert Gaines and what he did to them. I have written to the parole board each year as Bob Gaines has sought release from incarceration, as have some of his victims. I'm not going to repeat myself, as those letters should be all a part of the should be all a matter of record. Instead, what I would like to impress upon the board is that Robert Gaines repeatedly abused his wives, children, and the children of others for decades. His own son has openly divulged the arson, tax evasion, drug dealing, abuse of children and women, and other criminal acts committed by Robert Gaines. He was finally charged with the murder of his lovely young wife, tried, convicted, and sentenced. To date, Mr. Gaines denies that he is guilty of Carrie's murder or of any of the acts committed against many women and children. As far as I know, Mr. Gaines has not undergone intensive psychiatric evaluation. As far as I know, he has not been diagnosed with mental illness, and therefore no treatment plan has been initiated or followed. As a result, I find it hard to believe that if Mr. Gaines is released from prison, his behavior is going to be any different than it was prior to his conviction and incarceration. I believe Robert Gaines is still the man he was prior to being incarcerated, and believe that if he is released, it will only be a matter of time before others are victimized. Having worked in victim advocacy and fought for the rights of victims in the state of Arizona during the 1980s, along with then Senator John Kyle and other vested politicians, helped to get funding for the Crime Victim Foundation, spoken before state and federal conferences on the rights of victims, and listened to more victim stories than my heart can handle to recall. I know all too well how lives are forever changed by victimization. As you know, when even one person is victimized, the impact is felt by dozens, even scores of the victim's family, friends, and associates. But from what I know and from what I have been told by his victims and detectives, Robert Gaines didn't just victimize only one person. He victimized dozens, even scores of people, resulting in exponential damage that continues to adversely affect hundreds of people. So the question I believe you should ask yourself is this. When you look into this man's eyes, do you honestly believe he understands or is even aware of just how much damage his actions caused? Is he truly remorseful for it? Or has he even admitted to any of it? If not, then it is foolish to believe that he has been rehabilitated to the point where he is no longer a threat to society. And if you somehow answered yes to each of those questions, ask yourself one more. Would you be comfortable having him next door to you, your children, or your grandchildren? I recognize how difficult your job is and appreciate your efforts on behalf of all of us who reside in Arizona. At this point, I can only trust in your wisdom in addressing this matter. Sincerely, Janice S. Bailey.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Gaines. Message from the victims and victims' advocates. We're nearing the end of your hearing. And the board will be going to end the discussion shortly to make a determination. But before we leave, I'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. If there's anything else you'd like to tell the board before we make our decision, now would be the time to do it. We just ask that you don't repeat all the information we've already covered.
Well, there is one thing I'd like to say, and this name of Jennifer has popped up before. That was my son Rick's wife's younger sister. I only saw her maybe twice in my life. I never spoke four words to her. She never spoke four words to me. Everything that she was describing in that, and I know you're not going to believe me, but everything that she was describing in that was done to her by Rick Gaines. And there's no way I could prove it unless I was out there. But I could prove it if I was out there. She was relating that all that stuff that she said happened to her was not me, it was Rick Gaines and or the kid that was living with him in that apartment, the Apple Apartments on 7th Street, something Fisher, Joe Fisher, I think. But those two are the ones that did that to her, and I got blamed for it because they just figured, well, he's getting blamed for all this other stuff. We'll throw that in, too. And that, I wanted to make that plain because I want to get that in the record.
Okay.
And that's all I got to say.
All right, thank you, sir. The board will be going into discussion now to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. We ask you to stay on the phone, but remain silent. And once we've made a determination, I'll get back with you, okay?
All right.
It was time. The board is now in discussion. Well, this is a terrible case. A far-reaching case. But just on the facts of the murder and what the sentence is for. I don't feel Mr. Gaines is taking responsibility for his actions. I know we hear it all the time, but I find it hard to believe that the evidence that was used to convince the jury of guilt is all wrong, so to speak. But I'm looking at the responsibilities of the board and looking at in the interest of justice and in the interest of the safety of the community, I have to put the whole package together. And the behavior up into the murder and then a very big lack of taking responsibility, all the deflection and everything else, I would not be comfortable having Mr. Gaines out in the community at all at this time, whether it be home arrest or parole arrest or discharge. I don't think the interests of the safety and the public is would be met there, and truthfully, I don't think the interests of justice have been met either if we need to be released at this time. But I'm going to listen to discussion from my fellow board members, Mr. Tenomas.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up, Mr. Neal, thank you. As one voting board member, I do not believe that good behavior inside the collection system is a standalone reason to grant parole. I don't really say that because we often hear very challenging cases where the individual may have had a good standing with their discipline. But again, I don't believe it's a standalone reason to grant parole. And frankly, I sense a threat to the community and its character, and the capacity for vengeance in its tone. I heard it in his voice. I cannot support any form of release. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Canales.
Just briefly, Mr. Hill, I will echo that, and I could not support any sort of release for this individual.
Mr. Dunn?
I agree.
Dr. Wright?
I agree. Deny. Jump away. Home arrest or absolute discharge.
Thank you, sir. Okay, based on all the information we have today, I will refer the testimony and the information in our packet of reports in reference to Robert Gaines, AGC 082914. I'm going to deny local home arrest or absolute discharge at this time.
Second.
Agreed. And with the David Johnson, I'm going to ask a 1 year setup.
Agree.
Agree. Second amendment.
Right, sir.
Okay, thank you. With myself, second by Mr. Jones, agreeing by Dr. Wright, with Mr. Johnson's written house. Type of release tonight is a 412A, 411, yes. And reasons for the denial is a serious and violent offense, a loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim. Victim harassment. Somebody else would like to have that. Okay, concerned, the board have unanimously voted to deny regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge at this time. Can you hear the reasons?
Yes.
All right, and because of the date of crime, we're going to ask the lawyer to set off for approximately a year. Department of Corrections will certify you for another board hearing, and you'll be back in front of us at that time. So we do wish you the best of luck, sir. This will end your hearing, and would you please put the CO3 back on the phone?